Well, ordinarily we do this in about 10 minutes or so, but we just couldn't wait. So I thought I'd bring him along right now to look back at the year's stories in the field of religion and ethics that perhaps you missed, but were very, very significant. Or perhaps some grand themes that have emerged. You know him and love him. His name is Scott Stevens. He's the editor of the ABC's Religion and Ethics website, and he joins us once more. Thanks for coming in, Scott.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Thanks, Waleed.
It is always a pleasure to talk to you as well. Now, what's caught your eye and nobody else's?
Well, look, I must say I've got the rare distinction of having published something on ABC Religion a little bit earlier this year that nobody else in the world, as far as I can see, actually ran. And to my mind, it is one of... I know this is remarkable. The ABC breaks a story. Well, not quite breaks a story, but still, this was something incredibly important, it seems to me. And this is, I think, the issue that if every other thing that we're going to talk about in the next little while passes people by, I really think this is the thing that we should keep our eyes on. Now, over the last 3 years, Middle Eastern politics have been very, very much front and center in terms of global media, the world's attention. We're very aware, not just of democratic or supposedly democratic revolution, but also eruptions in places like Egypt and Syria. We know that there is something afoot in the Middle East, although it's becoming increasingly difficult to define exactly what that is. But I think something that has really, you know, it's become rather easy for people just to talk about religious tensions or tensions between, or, you know, even internecine tensions among Muslim groups or between different religious groups. One of, to my mind, the premier Muslim scholars of this generation, and certainly a kind of statesman among Muslim jurists, Khaled Abu Al Fadl, professor of jurisprudence at UCLA.
Yeah.
Himself Egyptian by birth. He's been in the U.S. for some, I think, 3 decades or so. He brought something to my attention that I'll confess, Waleed, I just had no idea about. Late August, early September this year, the Al-Sisi government in Egypt deregistered just over 55,000 mosques. Now, that doesn't sound particularly interesting or particularly important, but within the context, not just of global Islam, but also Egypt as a particular seedbed of Islamic scholarship and vibrancy, this is actually quite catastrophic. What Khaled Abu Al Fadl pointed out is that, like in Syria, in Egypt, all land, all religious sites, whether they be Muslim, Christian, Coptic, whatever, are owned by the government. All official imams are effectively on the payroll of the Ministry of Religious Endowments. And these mosques and official or state-sanctioned imams are only sanctioned if they come out of one of the state-sanctioned seminaries like Al-Azhar University. Now, the problem that he points out, as soon as you get rid of, or as soon as you deregister or render illegal these non-state-sanctioned mosques, what effectively you have, and this is, to my mind, one of the most chilling things that he pointed out, is effectively quite a corrupted version of Egyptian secularism, which doesn't mean a separation of church and state, but rather it means effectively the creation of an Egyptian church, or, you know, in a corrupted way, you know, a kind of official state form of Islam that then becomes the mouthpiece of the state itself.
Right, so it's the domination of religious institutions by government. It's like the wholesale ownership of it, which I can understand him pointing to that as a big development, because actually, and I think I know where he's coming from here, that was actually a major dynamic in the experience of colonization within Egypt, which is part of the reason that you got the organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood springing up, which is, I'm assuming, one of the main reasons that the interim Egyptian government has taken the stance that it's taken. It's kind of like the circle completes itself.
That's exactly right. Quite apart from the political and social dynamics here, simply from a theological point of view, I mean, he points out, for instance, can you imagine anything more tedious and banal and suffocating than the mass circulation of official state-sanctioned sermons that are then passed out to official imams in order to be repeated before official mosques around Cairo and across the country? And so I think there is a kind of intellectual and moral suffocation that can that's threatening to take place here as well. And so one of the things that he points out is that this dynamic in Egypt and in Syria and elsewhere, you know, while unofficial mosques can become seedbeds of all sorts of awful activity, you know, when the state comes to ventriloquize, if I can put it that way, when it comes to ventriloquize the voice of God, then only catastrophe can happen. So he's actually waving this flag as something that may well alter the course of Muslim history in the Middle East, if not rectified. And so I think this is a major story we're just not hearing anything near enough about, but it's well worth paying attention to.
Yeah, I can see how that could have enormous consequences, and it's a good thing that you brought it to our attention, because it's one of those sort of below the surface thematic developments, I suppose, that we tend not to notice until the consequences arrive and we go, where did that come from? And that's exactly the purpose of that kind of analysis. I want to point out, Scott, that while you are the editor of the ABC's Religion and Ethics website, you are very clearly not the editor of Time magazine. And I say this because I understand you have a rather heretical view that Benedict remains or is, as far as this year is concerned, a more significant figure than Francis, as far as the Catholic Church is concerned. Now, defend yourself.
Lots and lots of people, including Catholics, hate me for this, simply because for the last 5 years, Benedict was almost the bad news story that just wouldn't end. And yet something that has been dramatically overlooked by Time magazine, who we all know now, named Francis as their person of the year, Francis simply would have been impossible if it hadn't been for Pope Benedict. And I say that on three grounds. Number one, the Catholic Church worldwide was in a state of absolute doctrinal, moral, theological, liturgical chaos in the period following Vatican II. And one of the clearest examples of that it was in the late 60s, early 70s that the phenomenon of sexual abuse reached its apogee throughout the West, Western Europe, United States, and Australia. It was figures like Benedict and some of his confreres within a particular wing of Catholic theology that brought so much of the chaos that had come to dominate in the Church to check and created a sense of stability, but also historical recognizability, so that the Church began to feel in a way that might have been recognized by, you know, as people say, 400 years ago. One of the things that a dear friend said to me is, if it hadn't been for Benedict, then the Catholic Church would look like the Anglican Communion, and who would want that? One of the other things, of course, that Benedict is just not given anywhere near enough credit for, is that it was at his behest that the great reforms of the last 30 years within the Catholic Church took place, including the all but eradication of the phenomenon of sexual abuse within the Catholic Church over the last decade and a half and up to two decades. This has provided Francis with clear air that would have been impossible.
Finally, hang on, I'm going to put you up there. Do you really think the air is that clear? It seems to me that there's a fair stench in that air that surrounds the Catholic Church, and the issue will not leave them alone. And I understand the argument you're putting about Benedict's response, although previously as Cardinal Ratzinger's response. But he's also, that's been an albatross around his neck, hasn't it? Mm. There's been a lot of criticism of him as being the man on whose watch a lot of this happened.
Yeah, I don't know what that on whose watch, I don't know what that actually means. I mean, it seems to me something that's very conveniently trod out in the media as a way of personifying a particular ill that we have, or a particular fault that we want to find with an organization. The reforms, both in terms of seminary training of priests, the reforms in terms of discipline, but also the centralization of dealing with perpetrators and pedophiles within the Catholic Church, all of that took place under then Joseph Ratzinger and then finally Pope Benedict. And so I think that there is a kind of, you know, for those who understand Christianity, there actually is a kind of appropriateness about the person who did more to eradicate this cancer within the Church, the blame being laid at his feet. But, you know, Willie, let's just remember, 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when he made an apostolic journey to the UK, there were calls being made for him to be indicted, for Pope Benedict to be indicted and brought before the Hague. Nothing like that surrounds Francis. And I think the reason is while this scandal still remains so much within the Church and will continue to do so until this generation of leaders goes, Francis is receiving clear air that would have been unimaginable even sort of 8-9 months ago.
Very quickly, Scott, I'm asking people for their New Year's resolutions for Australia. You can go even more broadly than that if you want. You can go to the world, and everyone just seems to articulate whatever their political fancy of the moment is, but I suspect you won't do that. Do you have a resolution for us?
Resolution for me myself, or that I'd like other people to follow? For the country, read more and read less crap.
Wow! I mean,
seriously, Waleed, we are dying. The West is dying for lack of a good, informed, enlivened imagination. And I think there's been some wonderful fiction that's been published over the last 5 years. We're at the end of a century of tremendous fiction that's been created. I think people could do much worse than to give their imagination, their capacity for empathy, a good wake-up call by reading some really, really superb fiction.
What a great resolution. And if you have a summer's reading list that you would like to submit to Scott Stevens for his approval, you can email or tweet him, and he will no doubt have a view that he can share with you. Scott, it's always a pleasure. It's a bit sad to come to the end. I look forward to speaking to you next year.
Okay, can't wait.
Scott Stevens, editor of the ABC's Religion and Ethics website.